Close. Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblight focused podcast. I'm your host, Tyrone, and joining me this week is Ryan. Welcome back, Ryan.
Ahoy! We got our focus back, or something. I don't know. We keep changing exactly what it's called, and I don't know if it's like a Freudian slip or what. Do you have some daddy issues you want to talk about, Tyrone?
I have no idea what you're talking about. This has been the same intro for like... I'm going to like scroll back through my show notes.
Go ahead. You've gone from a Legion of Everblight focus podcast to a Legion of Everblight podcast. Yeah. At one point, you just said a podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. We've switched so many times. I feel like you've got some Dragon Daddy issues going on.
Okay. I don't agree with that, but it's been at least 20 episodes since I've done this intro, so I don't know why you're grinding my gears now.
I don't know. I just got home from work. It's been a weird day. I got to go after somebody, and you happen to be the first person I talked to. So yes. Congrats.
You're welcome, Ryan's significant other. Oh my god.
Fucking Christ. Off to a great start. I love it.
Yeah. Always just knocking it out of the park on this show. We have a special guest this week. Anders from the team Sweden 2 Electric Banana Band from the VTC. He's joining us this week. Welcome to the show, Anders.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. The VTC was pretty big. For something that was, you know, fairly decentralized, all the rounds were played. Well, the first round was played over the course of a week, right? And then the last four were done over a weekend, which I don't know. That seemed ambitious to me, but I'm no organizer. How did you find the VTC?
To give a lot of credit to Steph, who organized it, because it was an amazing experience. And like Steph and the judges made, they made the event. That's all I can say.
Yeah, Steph invited me to the VTC Discord. I was able to
stream a couple of the games. Didn't you?
Yeah, I streamed a few. I didn't have a ton of time, but I was able to do the round one, a couple of the round one games, so that was all right. Got a nice little overlay going now, so if I ever get to stream again in the future, it'll look nice and sexy.
Like professional streaming, or just any idiot that wants to play a game and you happen to be around streaming?
Oh, I can, as long as I'm available, I'll stream anybody. So hit me up.
Well, if anybody wants to be streamed by a semi-pro, you know who to go to.
Yeah. Ryan, did you partake in the VTC at all?
I didn't. Mostly because I didn't know when it was going on until it was like 3/4 of the way over. My entire like perception of time at this point doesn't exist. So like I had no idea what was going on, I'm gonna be honest. Like if you've ever come out of like several days of doing LSD, it was a lot like that.
Lovely.
Nice.
Not that I've ever done that. That was, you know,
of course.
For legal reasons, that's a joke.
No, of course, yeah. It was really cool to see. I know there was a lot of judges around for different time zones and for the week long round, and the weekend seemed to go pretty well. Obviously with the tournament that spans multiple countries and time zones, obviously there's a bit of a scheduling nightmare. I know like one of the rounds was played fairly early for the US and Canada, but I mean, like I said, there's not much you can do about that really.
Now, yeah. for people who don't know, the VTC was basically the WTC, just virtual, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Should probably, you know, like, say that at some point.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's fair. That's fair. I'll go check out the server really quick and see if I can find a couple names. So we got some judges. We got Dave Ricketts, Dean Booth, we got a couple other streamers as well, including myself. There was the Fishcord guys. There was Stephanie, who was, I'm pretty sure, involved in a fair bit of the streaming, as they are from Night's Machine. So, you know, shout out to the organizing committee for putting that together. Does anyone know who won? It was all gas, no breaks, right, from America?
Yeah. I think they won, if I remember correctly. So, the final standings are up on tiebreak. So all gas, no breaks, they won. And the Mollywhoppers came second. Canada Goose came third. So the NA took top three.
Dang.
And then Sweden Bop, which is our prime team, they came in fourth.
What's the name of the team?
Bop.
Dad Bop?
Burp Bop.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all the strange umlauts.
Of course. Yeah. You got to get all the umlauts in there.
Exactly.
Dotting your umlauts is like 2/3 of finishing up what you're doing.
Well, there's like an umlaut, and then there's like an actual circle on top of the character, and I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Oh, great. Awesome. Sweden is kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. I mean,
there's certainly kind of something. So, wait a minute. Molly Whoppers came in second?
Yeah, according to Tiebreak. I'm not sure if Tiebreak was actually correct, because there were some issues with how things were calculated, but I think if I remember correctly, NA swept top three.
Let me check the server really quick here.
I'm going to have to look at this later, because of, like, depending on who is on that team, there's some people I got to start giving shit to now, otherwise their heads are...
Oh, yeah. But, I got a story about that, actually, but okay. We'll get to that in time.
According to what I found, it's all gas, no breaks, Canada Goose, Sweden, Bop Bop, and Mid-Atlantic Molly Whoppers in fourth.
Okay, so that was the actual, so I was wrong. The tiebreak is wrong.
That's fine. Like, you know, stat software is going to have disagreements, like, you know, depending on how you set it up. So, good. Congratulations to those four teams. Like, that's, you know, but like I said, just getting everything done on time. Like, I know the weekend was nuts for a lot of people, so congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, I can barely imagine how it was for the organizers, because this must have been hell to organize.
Yeah, I know Steph seemed pretty exhausted after.
Yeah.
One weekend of that has got to be like, all right, I'm done playing for the next 6 months. I'm out. This is enough.
I sort of felt like that, but then I realized the CID is around the corner. And I'm like, yeah, I probably want to get some games in.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually a good point. We should just quickly mention CID. This episode will probably come out after everything gets posted, but Linusite got a couple spoilers in advance. The most interesting one to me is that Hex Hunters are gaining native apparition, which is awesome. How do you feel about that, cool. Anders?
I mean, I was sort of hoping they would get something, because I still haven't bought Legionnaires, and so I'm just hoping, like, I was hoping for this. I was actually just expecting, like, plus one speed, so speed 7 instead, but apparition is so much cooler. I never played in Mark II, and I never played when they actually had apparition, so, for me, that's really cool. I'm looking forward to Beth 1 with some Hex Hunters, at least until the Virtues come out.
Okay, cool. Ryan, what are your thoughts on the Hex season now?
I mean, this change basically takes them back to where they were in Mark 2. So the last, 4 years, 5 years of changes basically all just got reversed.
The difference being that they went from speed 7 to speed 6 with apparition, right?
Yeah. But, like, basically they are how they came, like, were in Mark 2. They're fine. Like, I don't have a problem with them right now. I think apparition is a good add to them, and I think it gives them a little more versatility. The only problem I have with them is that currently they're fighting against Virtues for a spot in Oracles, and against all of the normalness in Children, and this is going to sound weird, but, like, I can't think of too many times I would want to take them, even with apparition and even with, like, the changes. I feel like it's going to depend on the list. Like, if you're running Incubi, they probably are a better choice as, like, a delivery system, but just, like, as a base unit, I keep looking at them and going, okay, but Legionnaires exist now and are cheaper and are actually decent. Swordsmen hit harder, archers have farther range, and Virtues clear infantry better. So what are these guys actually doing? Like, one unit with Baal will probably be fine as, like, a soft control, but I don't know about ever running two, and I don't know if their job is supposed to be, like, a soft control unit. So I think there's some experimentation that's got to happen there.
I think a mini unit with Baal, sort of like... that's Rick and Morty meme. What are my purpose? Well, get by all. Is a pretty cool use for them. I think they're strong with Beth 1 and or some of those casters that have things like Abby 1 with Bite Burst. Nice combo of Shadowbind followed by Bite Burst is pretty cool. And the 14-inch non-linear threat under spells is pretty cool. We can hide behind the forest, do some crazy shit. Like you said, I think it's hard to, especially with so many new toys and stuff coming up in the factions, and especially the factions where they're in, they're competing directly with Virtues, which are, unless you're playing some specific caster, for example, Bethwan has the feat, I think it's hard to pass up the Virtues that are just overall strong.
Yeah, I think for me, the Hex Hunters, like, they found a little bit of a niche previously, dealing with battle engines, right? Where they could shadowbind them pretty effectively with Bial. You just had to be careful, obviously, to not get them completely killed. But, you know, over a couple turns, if you can keep, like, a frustrating battle engine in place, like the turtle, you know, that's pretty reasonable.
It is. And I think with them and a lot of the infantry, after assuming the changes go through as they were, we'll find out for sure in 2 days, probably after this has come out. But depending on, you know, how the changes come out, I think it's going to be interesting, and I think it's going to be very caster dependent and very list dependent with which units you end up taking. I think all of them right now are in a good spot. Which is not a bad thing by any stretch, but it makes it hard to evaluate, like in a vacuum, which one is going to be the quote-unquote best. I think it's going to be very situational, very dependent on your caster, very dependent on your pair, and what your list itself is trying to do versus having, you know, like if you look at Rhett, Sentinels are like the standout infantry unit. You'll take them like 99% of the time if you have the option. Whereas I don't know that there's any like infantry in Legion beyond like the Hellmouth where that is the same thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with Anders. It's definitely a good thing that we have a variety of units now that we can take and not just like raptors, you know, like
yeah, it's not just raptors chosen in Hellmouths. You actually have choices now, and don't get me wrong, that's an amazing thing. But I think as far as like trying to discuss a list and trying to discuss like, oh, well, is this unit good? Like, that's going to be a hard one to answer now. Like, it depends on a lot of different factors and what you're trying to do. So yeah. Maybe?
No, and I'm okay with that. But there were a couple other changes, but they're both like minor nerfs. The Blade Archon spray is going down to Pal 12.
And,
yeah, I know. Well, what can you do, right? Like, they didn't change anything else as far as we know, so it still has all those great spells that we were looking forward to, so that's really what matters right now.
I don't know. Yeah. I really liked the spray. I would have rather that stayed at Pal 14.
I mean, sure. I can't argue with that, right? It's always nice to have more powerful stuff.
But I think out of the nerfs they could have done, it's either that or make the spray range 8 are the ones that were sort of like the least punishing.
Yeah, see, I would have rather just, like, lost Dragon's Blood for deflection or something. Like, if they're worried about, oh, well, I can arm stack plus do all this damage. Like, I would rather lose the arm stacking and have a strong solo that can get a lot of work done on its own. Like, that's how I've been playing it. That's how I've liked it. So it hurts me personally a little bit more because that's how I've been playing it.
Yeah, okay. And the last one was, the hell was it?
Beth 2.
Oh, right. Yeah. Bane 2. Her feat is going to living only, which kind of sucks because it takes away a couple of her options. Primarily, it takes away the Blade Archon as a transfer target who could then transfer to beasts that she didn't select. It takes away the objective as an option and the Mechano Shredder, which you probably weren't choosing, but like he had a decent number of boxes for 4-point lessers, so the option was there.
I think what they could have done is just instead of going with living, they could have just gone with non-construct to allow it to go to the Blight Archon, but I think they were concerned about the sort of the massive transfers.
Yeah.
That was a thing that got brought up in the CID choosing the Archons as a feat target. And then letting them be able to transfer to send it somewhere else. Like, I think Hungerford was like, yeah, it's spreading the web. Like, that's a good thing. That's a thing we wanted to be able to do. And then to just, I guess, after the fact, take that away, like, yeah, it's a pre-release, you know, pre-release rules, so they're subject to change, and everybody knows that. I don't know how I feel about this one personally. It kind of, to me, feels like it's just cementing Beth 2 in Primal Terrors.
Like, so there is probably a trick you can do. If you choose the beast that is tied to the Blight Archon, you can probably transfer from the Blight Archon to the beast, and then from the beast to something else.
Maybe, but then your Blight Archon has to be, again, up the field to take damage.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It has to have enough transfers, like,
yeah,
and then you have to not lose it. So it might not be bad for something like that, but it's still, it feels to me like it's cementing her as her most competitive place to be in Primal Terrors. And I still, like, if her spell list and everything else comes out like it was in CID, I guess I don't see, like, the point of her. I don't understand what she's supposed to be doing, and that's not a great place to be. Like, she might very well be strong, because Transmutation's a good spell, and the debuffs are good spells, and her AoE itself is, you know, a debuff, which is great, but it seems like she's relying on those two spells then, and the feat just got worse, and I don't understand what she's supposed to be doing. Like, I don't get what niche she's trying to fill. I don't get what she's trying to, like, accomplish in a game. She's just, I don't know. She feels very kind of all over the place for me.
Yeah. I kind of like the, like, I have so many janky ideas with her. I want to try them. So I'm not ruling her out yet. And I think she could probably be a strong scenario warlock. But then again, like, PT was never never the thing that drew me into Legion. I've realized how strong they are after I've started playing. So I've sort of been migrating there, but I still don't own any Ogryn, like proper models. I have them on order, but they haven't arrived yet. But I'm more excited to try her out in different things, like Ravens with a ton of Harriers for extra boxes for an Archangel, that sort of stuff. But see.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, there's room to try, there's room to experiment, which is nice. Like, whenever you get new models to play with, there's always something you can try out and see how it transforms your list building. So I'm looking forward to seeing what people make. But okay, that's probably enough. We're here to talk about the VTC. We kind of got sidetracked. Anders, I know you played all five rounds, right?
Yeah, I played all five rounds.
Okay. Did you want to talk about your rounds and how they went?
So yeah, I'm going to start with talking about the lists I picked, actually.
That's a good idea.
So for the people who don't know me, I've been playing for about, well, I started playing around Christmas last year, right before the pandemic, nice, eh?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So I actually haven't played that much. One of the local guys at the club I have had a bunch of Legion, and Legion was always, like, I've been drawn to War Machine before because of Legion's aesthetics. Like, the Archangel is such an amazing model. I like Suriel, I like Azrael, like Tagrosh 2, all those models I love. So that's what drew me to Legion. And so I've been playing just recently, and he had a lot of, like, stuff that was basically just primed. So I didn't even have to do any of the annoying work of, like, mounting everything and priming them. I could just start collecting and painting. I got him a really good price of, like, 25% of their original value, which was really nice. So I started playing half a year ago. I haven't played that much. I played about, I think, 40 or 50 games in total. And we'd had a steamroller right before our local store stopped hosting in-store games because of the pandemic. And I've enjoyed Abby too a lot. Like, she's such a fun warlock to play. Super beast heavy in PT for the free helmets. And the opportunity came up to join the VTC because Sweden has a pretty big War Machine community, at least a bit pretty big competitive War Machine community. And the town I live in has a lot of the sort of big players. And they were starting to talk with the other players around Sweden about joining the VTC. And there were 9 players. So they could only form one team, so they basically needed a fifth for the second team.
And I was like, you just volunteered and were like, I'm in.
Exactly. So Pippi Longstockings once had a quote which said, oh, I've never done that before. I'm sure I'm an expert at it. So here we go. So I basically said, well, I'm like, I mean, you can't have any expectations of me, but I can join so you guys can field the second team. And we sort of collectively decided that we were gonna top load one team. So most of the players that are sort of high rated, we have Daniel Bergstrom with his Siege 1 and a lot of the other players who are really sort of, they're pretty big. They've been to the VTC before, the WTC before. They are high ranked in Sweden, etc. They formed sort of the A team, if you put it like that. We have some very talented players in our team as well. But sort of collectively, they had the best spread of factions, etc. And then sort of the rest of us, we just formed into the B team and figured, well, hell, let's have some fun at least. So we did. And it has been an interesting experience, let me put it like that. So, like I said, I've been playing Abby 2 the most. She's been the warlock that I'm absolutely the most comfortable with. I know her better than any of the others. So I figured, well, she has to be in my pair. But I also had to figure out something to bring with her. And so my Abby 2 list, it was Abby 2 with two Blight Wasps, Golab, Mechana Shredder, Neraf, Proteus, Seraph, six Shredders, Amok, the Hermit, two Spell Marchers, and two Hellmouths in PT.
Okay, so my first thought hearing that is you don't have enough Shredders and you need more Shredders.
that is basically my idea. So this is actually a mis-submission of the list. So there was some debate with my captain going back and forth about how to build a list, and my initial list actually had one more Shredder and no Hermit. It had a Swamp Cobra Chef instead. But he was like, well, I mean, you have basically no solos that can hold anything for any amount of time. And I'm like, well, fine, I'll add the Hermit, but I need something for Fury Management, so I'll add a Forsaken as well. And then somewhere along the line, that sort of got lost. So the only thing I added was the Hermit, so I had no Fury Management.
That's amazing.
You don't need it, it's fine.
There was sort of like, I realized after a while, like, I didn't actually need it, which was interesting. Because, like, I'm expecting most of this shit to die when I launch it anyway. So, like, why would I take a Forsaken to take off Fury of something that's probably gonna die? If it lives, it lives. If it frenzies and lives, that's still a win.
Yeah, looking at this list, it's like, the models you actually care about are, like, Golab and the Neraf and Proteus, and that's basically it. And Abby can run those just fine.
Exactly. So, I was actually pretty fine with this. I was a bit worried about contesting, but between Amok and Hermit, I felt like I could contest things pretty well. Actually, I named this one together with Raven from the Legion Discord channel. I named it Supportist Theft, which is fairly accurate, actually.
It's a good name.
The Swedes and the Australians are teaming up. This is a good plan. I like it.
I had to have someone to bounce ideas off, and I knew he wasn't joining, so I was like, well, I'm going to bounce some ideas off you.
Yeah,
and then on my off list. So approaching this, I knew I wanted to play things that weren't changing too much, because after the VTC, I wasn't playing stuff that wasn't, like, after CID or NVC, I wasn't playing stuff that that was unchanged. And of course, like I said before, I've never tried Kallus 1, so let's do that. So I made a Kallus 1 list. So my initial thought with this was never to play this guy. I just wanted to add him to sort of have people think, oh, he's not like, oh God, he's gonna drop Kallus 1 into, like, drop something to face that or whatever. Like, I wanted people to not go into. I didn't want to drop this list. The problem is, so I'm gonna tell you what I put in it. So it was Kallus 1, a Blightbringer, Golab, Amok, two units of Max Rotwings, two units of Chosen, one Min, one Max, and two Hellmouths. So, can anyone tell me what the problem with that list is?
I don't see an issue.
You don't see an issue? It has only one solo.
Yeah, does it though?
I mean, until feet turn. The problem is when you're playing a... I realized this after the fact, I will tell you. This was sort of a panic submission in a way. So, the problem when I was trying to go for a list like this is I want to force people to come into me on the feet turn because I will be scoring so many points. Problem is that with only one solo, I could cover one flag at max. And I knew bunkers was one of the scenarios, which was a problem.
None of this seems like a problem to me.
Yeah. Also, yeah, so, I mean, I thought I was being sort of clever with like, oh, I'm going to add in Golab, so I have that nice entropic aura. And it has some veteran leader for the Rotwings. But really, the Hermit would have been better. The Hermit plus other stuff, like the Hermit plus a Mechanishredder. That's 9 points, and then I have 8 points left. I could have maxed out the other Chosen, probably.
Yeah, and do you really need Vet Leader when you have Dark Guidance? Like
exactly. So, I mean, I was going up against so many Faonas, so maybe. But like I said, the intention was never to drop the list, which, I mean, every plan fails when it contacts the enemy. So, yeah, I was going into it with these two lists, and I knew for a fact that I would have a problem on Bunkers, because there was only one list I could drop there, and that's the Abbey 2. I could never score enough. The list didn't hit hard enough. The PT list didn't hit hard enough for them to... They could probably just wait out my feat turn. And with so little shooting as well, I was probably feating first, even into like a defensive matchup. So the Kalos 1 list had problems. And I realized all these problems way after list submission, of course.
Yeah.
That's usually how that works, yeah.
Exactly. So, I was still fairly happy with, like, I was happy with my Abby list. And I was like, well, I'll just drop Abby.
Just put an Abby into everything. She's fine.
Exactly.
I mean, you're not playing the good Abby, so whatever.
Yeah. Fine. Hey, I love this one. She reminds me of, like, a cool Kerrigan.
Ooh, okay. See, I'm on board now. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I like it. I like the good comparison. I mean, plan murder your opponent. It's like, you know, plan assassination is always an option with Legion, right? So,
yeah.
And Abby's very good at that.
That's how Poland has built their teams for like the last several years. From what I've
exactly.
Just go for the assassination top of two and you're fine.
Yeah. So, like, I think this was a cool opportunity. Like, I'm very much subscribed to the idea of learning by losing. And I would be playing against some of the best players in the world by joining this. So I hoped I would learn a lot. And I did.
What was the number one thing you learned?
If you're bringing Kalos 1, bring more solos. No. Okay, I have another one. Don't lose the roll off against Aurora.
Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah, she seems really hard for Legion right now. I don't know.
I think Virtus will help a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they certainly can't hurt.
Exactly. So, I will say this. So, the one thing about the team event is it really opened up, like, there's so much cool metagaming about, like, how you choose your opponents, how you match up, how the team covers each other's weaknesses. I absolutely see why the WETC is a thing. Because there's such a big difference from playing in, like, a Steamroller event or playing in a league where you only have your own two lists. And playing in a team where you can cover each other's weaknesses. And I think Legion is one of those factions that, at least up until CID, benefits a lot from that, because they can have sort of like other factions cover their problems with shooting, for example.
Yep, that's always been a thing, though, when you're looking at 3 or 5 person team events, is just the things you're the worst at, you can usually put someone else into, and that just feels good.
So, I mean, that was a cool thing. And I had two Protectorist players. I had one Kador player and one Scorn player and one Minion player with me in the team, which was sort of like, it wasn't the most competitive. Like, we had no Mercenary players or no Strange Bedfellows or whatever. So, but it was fun going in with that sort of thing. So, right, I'm just going to go over like quickly what happened. So round one, we were playing Invasion, and I was playing Brody from New Zealand. So he was playing Grimkin, and he had Wanderer and the Child, I think. And he dropped Wanderer, I dropped Abbey 2, I sort of followed. My team captain is also a fairly, he's a strong Legion player as well. So he was like, well, you should just know that Abbey 2 was like a boogeyman for Grimkin for a long time, so I'm just going to let you handle this guy. And so I dropped into Wanderer. He wanted to roll off and chose to go first. I feated first I, well, I mean, he doesn't feed, but I killed a Clockatrice, skin of bones, and some random chaff. And I was up on attrition, down on CP, and down on clock when he plays this Wanderer within range of both Golem and Abby. So the Wanderer has an Arcana that he can play when he takes damage, so he teleports to one of his road markers.
Yep, he sure does.
Yeah, so Abby charged first, stole a Fury, and bought a few attacks. And my main takeaway from this game is boost your attack roll when you're facing Starcrossed. Yep. Because holy frick, did I miss a lot.
That sounds right, yep.
Yeah, I did put some boxes on him. Golub followed up. He also missed a bunch of attacks, like the stupid things, like not... like I stupidly thought that Mat 9 would help, would be enough. It wasn't enough on Starcrossed. So I missed, for example, my charge attack. On my final attack with Golub, I managed to get him to trigger his Trump Arcana. So he teleported back to his one of his road markers. I noticed my Neraf could draw a line to him, like stupid long threat ranges, so that's nice. Problem was that it was going through a road marker. So had this been a live event, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that, because it was on the edge if I was actually in range or not. So I had to trigger his road marker, because when you trigger one of his road markers, he can move one model in his army 2 inches. And if he moved his caster 2 inches more back, I couldn't reach him.
Right.
So in a live event, I would have had to measure that line to see if I could charge with the Neraf, or had to sort of wing it. But in this game, I could just click my thing and see I'm in range. I don't need to care. So I moved something else on the road marker. He missed that my Neraf was in range. He moved something else up to contest. Neraf charged. He had no fury left. The case closed.
That's interesting, actually.
So I don't think I would have won this in a live event, or I would have had to sort of like... this was, I was down on scenario. I was down on CP. I was up on attrition, but he was like, he had 2 Naceflare units about to charge next turn, etc. So I think Brody could have taken this, but basically So Abby has long third ranges. Let's put it like that.
So you won out based on shenanigans.
I won with a assassination, proper new player thing.
Well, so my question is though, because like, you say you wouldn't have won it on the tabletop, right? But
I mean, it would have been a lot harder, I think.
Yeah, but the way I see it is that you can do the same thing, right?
I could, yes.
He's capable of checking the Neraf start range himself.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Especially playing on War Table, right?
Yeah.
So obviously he missed it as well.
Yeah, he did.
So at that point, like, yeah, it's harder to gauge correctly that you're in range. Like, I agree with that completely. But I think that's something that you definitely get a handle for over time.
Yeah.
And I think you could have done effectively the same play where you just move something else that is of little consequence and try and invoke movement from him. I think you're maybe right that it would have been harder, but I think it's still available for you.
I would have tried it in real life. I'm probably maybe not as savvy. I would have probably have measured out the threat range, forgetting that he could do his road marker thing. Maybe, I don't know. But it was one of those things where I had a bit of a crutch, but he also had a bit of a crutch, I guess. But in the end, it was like, we both agreed it was a good game, and like, he was really nice to play, and it was cool to play someone on the other side of the world. I think we played at about the same time as we're recording this podcast locally now. Geez.
Yeah.
I did the same thing there. I went to bed and then just got up in the middle of the night and played the game, which was cool. And he was a super nice guy. It was a fun game.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Second game, King of the Hill. We were going up against... let me see. We were playing on round 2. We were playing Canada Goose. So we were playing one of the high rated teams that ended up winning. Yeah, they ended up, I think, 3rd, if I remember correctly.
Second.
So yeah, we were playing Canada Goose, and I was playing Chandler, I think. If I remember correctly, yes.
You're playing Menoth?
Yeah, he's playing Menoth, exactly. The guy you know?
I would want to play Menoth.
So this was an interesting game. So I completely flubbed this. I should tell after the game with after the game I played against Brody, I practiced with Kalos 1 against our Sweden's final player, Sweden the first team's final player with Kalos 1, and we both agreed that Kalos 1 probably had some game into Fiona. Simply because like Tamarite Archons can't use Death Driver when it's Incubi because they get RFP'd before the destroy step, stuff like that.
Sure do.
Yep.
So it was a pretty cool interaction. So I sort of felt, so Shander was going to drop either Serenia or Sevi 1, and I had false confidence after playing my friend for a bit, and sort of thought, well, hell, this K1 isn't that hard to play. It's just shove the models up on feet, basically.
That's basically the Kalos 1, yeah.
Yeah.
Not right.
So I dropped Kalos 1, and this was a bad idea. So first of all, I realized afterwards that if he dropped Sevi 1, he could have just reduced my feet range and basically neutered my feet completely. He dropped Serenia though, and the problem was I had nothing that could deal with the Avatar. I didn't have enough stuff to punch through the Avatar under Serenia.
Have you tried just throwing more dudes at it?
I feel like I did try that since I had to. Stupid Gaze of Menoth. I didn't have enough armor cracking, and the Blightbringer was dead on the second turn. I think like it died fairly fast. Oops. I think misplaying the Blightbringer is my biggest problem with K1 in this tournament. Definitely, like going back and looking at my things, I wasn't conservative enough. I think I actually played my feet pretty well. I feated second, and before I feated he, so I knew I went second. That's the annoying part as well. He killed 5 Rotwings, I think, during his feat turn. So he moved in, feated, killed 5 Rotwings. I counterfeited, and at the end, I was still grinded down to a halt. I did have like my incubi and everything was doing quite a bit of work, and I was actually up on CP for a bit.
There's a bot coming.
Yeah. But I was assassinated at the end. I've had to play. Kalos 1 so far forward, and the Avatar and some other things basically just punched him to a pulp.
So classic blunder.
Yes, exactly. So that was a loss. I felt like, other than the stupidness of why did I drop Kalos 1 into either of these things, was sort of annoying. I should have dropped Abby. Definitely 100% of the time into that. I had so much more armor cracking. Like a few shredders can easily eat the Avatar, no problem.
I don't know the math on that.
Under the feet, I think. It shouldn't be that big of an issue.
Pow 12 weapon masters, Avatar's arm 20 with the shield, I think.
21 with the shield, yeah.
I mean, I would get probably there eventually.
I would probably have to start with one of the others. Like one of the big ones, one of the big guys.
Yeah, you'll get there eventually, or if you can get like the Nerf or something there as well.
Yeah,
set, but
yeah, that's true.
By themselves, I mean, with a lot of shredders, you'd have to throw at.
I could even have used Abby because it has to save. Like it has a bunch of focus it usually can't spend.
Right.
He rolled a 3 for his focus roll every single roll of that game, I think, except the last turn. So that was a bit rough as well. I could have stolen all that focus and stuff. So that was a loss. My big problem there was dropping K1. Absolutely, I had false confidence after playing it into something else, and I was being silly. I was like, maybe I'm not too bad at Kalos 1. I was too bad at Kalos 1. So yeah. So round three, we were fighting against Lish, please. Which was a Belgian team made up entirely of Merc players.
Yeah.
And I think they all had Gaspy 4 in one of their lists.
Is there enough Merc casters to do that?
There's
enough Legion Warlocks to do that.
Well, yeah, yeah. Legion is a real faction.
What? What?
Don't get me started. So, yeah, I was playing Lich Priest. The Vout who I was playing, he was playing Mercs, of course. He was a really cool guy. So this one, we ended up picking the maps. So in the VTC, one team gets to pick the maps, and the other team has sort of an advantage on the matchups. So the map was bad for me. Super bad. This was Bunkers, so I knew I had to play Abby 2. And I was up against either Gorton or Ashlyn 1. And Gorton basically brought a gun line, and the map had no cover. It had no obstructions. So I was facing a gun line on basically an empty field. So every flag on the middle of the bunkers was in in a trench. But I this was a classic sort of a tilt moment, I think. My teammate said he needed the map that was sort of my favorite, but he was super convinced he could win on it, and he did. So fair enough. So I basically was like, oh, fine, I'll take the last one. I did so many stupid things here. So I fucked up my spell markers. So he's ambushing Anastasia. I could easily tag both in melee. That was pretty nice. That was really bad. He killed 3 shredders out of my 6, and then he crippled the rest. So I also knew that I couldn't live through many turns of shooting. I had to find a way to trigger Alpha Hunter and cast Psycho Surgery in one turn, so I could heal those shredders back up and they could go in. I had to go balls to the walls, basically. So my Alpha took a bunch of solos, but Abby had to go deep. She killed a heavy and then repoed back, but she was camping 0. I stupidly didn't cast Dag out on Abby or put my Bracer Golab next to her, which would have been really nice versus Gorton's feet. My Shredder Charge failed to kill Gas before by 2 boxes,
which damn. Was nice.
Yeah, that was pretty, and that was through full camp as well, I think.
Oh my god, you must have rolled pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had one of them that was sort of like 18 boxes, and he was like, oh, okay, I need to. Yeah. So the counterfeit attack killed me proper. Gas before did most of the work on Abby, which was annoying, because if I had positioned Golab right and I actually killed Gasby, I think I would have been okay-ish. I still had my Hermit up. I would have been okay-ish, because, I mean, she still has decent stats, and there was a bunch of heavies in the way, like, in front of her.
Yeah.
But because of the feet and everything, I was dead.
Right.
And I knew this scenario was bad from the start, because I knew there was bunkers, and if my opponent was any savvy at all, they would look at my K1 list and just go, he can't drop this here, he's going to drop Abby 2, and then they would know what to drop versus me.
Yeah, that's kind of a bad feeling, right?
Yeah, so my team came through and managed 3 wins. I was fairly tilted from this game, I will say, both going into it and after. Like, I made a bunch of stupid mistakes, and I sort of zeroed in on how bad the map was for me and didn't, yeah. So that was bad.
Yeah.
So this was day one of sort of the weekend event was done after this. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool event so far. And do you have any follow-up questions or anything you're wondering?
No, I don't know if there's much to say about that game. You said you were against Vout, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I've had to play against Gorton, and it's not fun. That guy's real good. Bracer's pretty good against that, though, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. So I knew I had some tools I could actually use. I just fucking failed to use them, let's say.
Yeah. I'm looking at this list. I don't see a Gatsby in the Ashlyn list.
No. So you only had Gatsby in the Gorton list.
Oh, okay.
So they usually had it in one of their lists. I think that was the main thing. Oh. They sort of made it a thing.
All right, yeah.
This guy was really, like, he had such a nice... the first thing he said was basically... So I introduced myself telling everyone I was new, and if I made mistakes, I wasn't intentionally trying to cheat. and saying that I don't mind being called out, and I don't expect any like callbacks or anything. Just know that if I make a mistake, I'm not trying to cheat. Just call me out on it, and I'll fix it if I can. And if like I forget something, don't worry about it. That's how I learn.
Yeah.
And he basically responded with, "We're playing with Barbie dolls that aren't even real because we're playing online. I'm just here to have fun. Don't worry about it, dude."
That was awesome.
Pretty cool. Yeah, that was a really cool interaction.
Yeah, like wargaming's supposed to be fun, right? It's, you know, like it is a tournament, and you know, the prize is kind of just bragging rights for this one, but you still want to win. But, you know, I don't think you should, I don't think you should win at the expense of your opponent's, like, enjoyment, right?
Exactly. So that was a really cool. They actually got my vote for sort of best sportsmanship, but it was a very hard tie between them and like the next game I was going to tell you about.
Sure, yeah, tell us about round 4.
So I played the Mollywhoppers.
Oh, nice! Those guys are great.
Yes. So this was Cutter's team.
Yeah.
I played against Jeremy, who was playing Mercs. I basically threw myself on the Fiona bomb. So he had Fiona Irregulars or Aurora 2, Strange Bred Foes. I thought I could maybe force him to clock himself, killing my Rotwings and Incubi. You see where this is going? I said I was going to drop IP2 into everything. I didn't.
Yeah.
So I dropped K1. I knew IP2 would struggle hard into Aurora. I've played that matchup before, and it was really rough. Like, super rough, because they just threat so much further than you. And everything you have is living, and everything gets paralyzed. It's a stupidly annoying matchup.
Right.
I didn't want to play that. The problem is I went second versus Strange Bedfellows.
Yeah. Next.
And I severely underestimated how good Void Archons are at just reaching out and killing something.
Oh, Void Archons are nuts, dude. They're so good.
Yeah. So he managed to slingshot both of them off tentacles into the middle of my pile of Rotwings.
This was the
start of turn 2. He sprayed down a bunch of Rotwings and then ended my Blightbringer with the boosted attacks he gained from them. With 2 Void Archons.
Horrible.
Yeah. I believe there were some shots in there from Jax as well, and it went downhill from there. I ended up assassinated around turn 4. I could potentially have played my caster safer and maybe forced him to clock himself, actually. I talked with him a bit after the game, and he said that he was worried about that because he was definitely down on the clock. I think I had like 15 minutes on him or something.
Yeah,
a lot of my.
It's interesting. Yeah, so like the clock, it's a win condition that a lot of people don't see, when they're like just starting out.
Yeah.
Or even like experienced players. So when I was streaming Cutter's game, and
yeah,
he was down to like, I don't know, 3 minutes, and his opponent had like 12 or so still, right?
Yeah.
And his opponent ended up not doing what he needed to kind of just ride out the rest of the game, because Cutter's gonna clock, right? You put any sort of scenario pressure onto him and he's gonna clock this game. He has like 3 more rounds left. He doesn't have enough time.
Yeah.
And his opponent ended up wasting a lot of time just trying to kill models that weren't important instead of just contesting and scoring where he could. And he ended up finishing his turn with like, I don't know, maybe like less than a minute left. And he's like, well, I guess this is over, and then conceded. And I was like, wow, Cutter stole that one, you know?
Yeah. So this is, I'm going to get back to that. I actually have a story about this.
Great.
So a lot of my problems in this one snowballed from bad positioning going into turn 2. Like, I didn't need to be that far up. I could have played my army so much more conservatively. He could have taken a few shots into my things. That would have been fine. But I put things so that he could basically easily, like, he sacrificed those 2 Void Archons, but that was fine because he killed the Blightbringer and a bunch of Rotwings, and then my whole plan was in shambles, basically.
Oh, okay.
So far, my Blightbringer has not survived turn 2 in any game I've played.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty bad failing.
Yeah, exactly. So I learned a ton from this game, and Jeremy was a great guy to play. So my anecdote about this is because I've listened to you guys, I knew Cutter was really bad at clock.
We love you, Cutter, but you're really bad at managing your clock.
So I basically told my captain this, and I was like, yeah, I mean, they always say he's really bad at clock. So we put our guy that is, like, he played this super hard to crack Menoth lists, and he just put those bricks up, and he was like, well, I'm just going to try and challenge him to solve the puzzle. And then Cutter ended up clocking himself. But I felt really bad because afterwards, Cutter was like, I realized it was super early in the, super early for like the NA guy. So he was really tired as well. And he was like, he was sort of talking about it in chat afterwards as well. Like, this is.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, this is really rough for us. So I felt a bit bad, actually. But it was.
The funny thing is with like Cutter specifically, and you know, a lot of people I've watched that have trouble on clock, if you gave them more time, they could figure out basically any puzzle you put in front of them.
Exactly.
They're all like super smart people.
Yeah.
The problem always comes down to, man, I have so many options. What's the best one?
Yeah.
And the minute you put that time constraint on them, it's just like, they just can't do it. Like, it's like, all right, I can figure out the best way to do this, but figuring out the best way takes 10 minutes and there's no way to speed that up, but I have to do it.
Exactly. So it's like, and I mean, he was playing Agathon as well, so he probably had an assassination out somewhere.
I mean, it's Agathon. There's always an assassination out.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that was a cool sort of thing going in, and it was something that like, you wouldn't, like, if you're playing one-on-one, if you're playing, like, a solo tournament, that's a completely different thing, but here we just knew, okay, so we can just put this guy into it, he won't get assassinated, and because of the way Infernals work and how they sort of want to ramp up and everything, and him playing Agathon with all these options, he's probably just going to clock himself, which was pretty... So it actually ended up working, and you could sort of tailor your team's input into also who they were playing, because you had sort of that background information.
So what you're saying is we need to stop talking about Cutter's weaknesses.
I felt a bit bad, to be honest, actually. Especially since I like the guy. But we ended up losing this round. And I think Nate was playing Legion as well.
He also brought
the same pair, but different things. So his lists were so much better than mine, at least.
Don't admit that. Nate's got a big enough head as it is.
At least the K1 list was so much better, I think. I had a look at it, because it could actually force an area much, much better.
Yeah, so I've got it up here. It's got Kallus One, the Blightbringer, Mechano Shredder, Amok, Hermit, Triple Spell Martyrs, Max Warmongers with Gorag, Double Max Rotwings, Max Chosens, and two Hellmouth. So yeah, like that list is strong. That's a pretty standard ET list for Kallus One now.
Yeah.
And it's very good.
And that one sort of covered, like, it fixed all the problems I had with my K-1 list, which is which was like, yeah, okay, so my list was shit compared. So that was really good one. I think his Abbey 2 list was tailored more to survive shooting, because he had both the Valkyries and the Wastelander in it, if I remember correctly.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that also makes sense when you're not going sort of balls to the walls with Abbey. I think we were considering if we're going to try and do the Legion mirror there when we were doing the matchup, because I think my Abbey 2 list probably had a bit... I mean, I don't have Nate's experience, but I think my list was a bit up versus his list, because his list was more tailored to... Like, he didn't have a Seraph, for example. So I knew my threat ranges were longer.
Yep. No, that's reasonable.
But at the same time, it's like, no, I think I'll try the other one. And yeah, it ended up like it did.
Cool.
You know how that would have ended, right? The Legion mirror in that case always turns out to be Kallus 1 versus Kallus 1.
Oh god,
don't get... No, that's no, like, way. I was not dropping Kallus 1 into that.
Yeah, that's like a 7-round grind fest of, okay, who hates themselves first?
Well, exactly.
The interesting thing, actually, about that matchup, and then I, like, just in theory, because I haven't played it, but whoever feats first loses, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting position to be in as for Kallus, because the second player, or who has the advantage in that instance, right?
I think the first player, because the first player can feat on turn 7, worst case.
Well, but then you don't get anything out of... You don't get the offensive output out of your incubi, assuming any live.
You don't, but I guess you get the contest, though. Like, how are you gonna remove all the... if you even get there.
Certainly, but, I mean, if it's round 7, like, how much stuff is left? You know, like, it's a weird game, right? So, yeah, personally, I think the second player has the advantage there, because they can feed bottom of 6 if it gets to that.
Fair enough.
And then still get use out of the incubi.
Assuming they have anything left to make incubi.
Oh yeah, no, it's a weird game, right? Like, I don't want to play that game.
So, funny anecdote, I realized when I was planning versus Fiona Flames, I realized I would have to feat first with Kallus 1. There is no way I could wait until Fiona feated. because Fiona could just shoot my shit off the table. The thing is, I actually think it would have been fine-ish, because you have Dark Guidance with Kallus 1, and you have the Combo Strike of the Incubi. The problem is you had to set yourself up into a situation where you both score turn 2. Like, you need to score, like, clear the zones out so you score turn 2, and then you need to be able to, like, put some dents and contest with the Incubi during Fiona's feed turn. But, I mean, didn't actually get a game into Fiona Flames, so I never
knew. That doesn't sound like a bad thing. Honestly, it sounds lucky that you didn't have to deal with Fiona.
I didn't say I didn't have to deal with Fiona. bringing on game 5.
You just didn't play Wing with Kallus.
Oh, no, I did.
Oh, you did? Oh, lovely. All
oh,
right.
Yes.
Round 5,
like
then.
I said, I think I was tilted from round 3. So
you had a day to sleep on it. Come on, Andrews.
I know. So round 5, spread a net. I was playing it. So we ended up losing the other round, and we dropped down to the sort of more of the fun bracket, if such a thing was the case for the VTC. Like, we weren't playing people who were ending up in the top spots anymore. So round 5, spread a net. I was playing against Tsunami from Team Italy. I'd watched him just barely beat Danix in round 1 and wanted to try fighting his Merklist. So he dropped Fiona into me, and actually this was the first Fiona I faced this tournament. I practiced a bit against our A-team player, Johan Dyrlid, who was playing Fiona in Flames. So this game, I think I was super tired. I'd been playing for 2 days straight. The kids were at home. They were sort of making a ruckus in the background. Things weren't super easy.
We haven't even started talking about the game yet, and we're already on qualifiers for what happened. Like,
oh, hey, yes.
Before I tell you about the game, realize I was tired, yeah, and the kids were here, and so, also everything in the world. Like, there was a lot of things going on.
We need, like, sirens. I'm gonna list
some of these mistakes. So, highlights. Not placing Golab in the correct spot to be able to kill his guys under Roth's Mercy, meaning I couldn't score the zone I needed and still having to feat. So basically, I feated with being just one up, which was a big problem. This one is nice as well. Not spacing my Shosen enough, meaning he could let Melvin and Mayhem kill an entire 5-man unit and still having to feat afterwards. Oh. So, yeah.
That sounds fun. That's a bad level. It's fine.
That was annoying.
M&M is perfectly balanced, and anyone who says otherwise is just complaining.
So, the problem was that since I wasn't scoring enough, he could just ignore all the birds. He didn't even need, like, he could just contest. And, like, I knew he was going to feat after me, so I feated first. Do you want to know how good Blighted Rotblings are at killing things under Fiona feat?
Probably I can tell not you. Great at it.
Not great at it. Let's put it like that. Yeah, not great at it.
You had Rot Wings under Dark Guidance. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right? It's yeah, fine, right? Tell I me think that
they're, they're PS9, I think.
Yeah, they are.
And they add one die. Sure. So they didn't kill a lot of things. Let's put it like that.
Hey, you had Golab. They're mat 6.
Yeah, if Golab hadn't been befuddled out of a zone and killed from behind, I would have had Golab. So this
just sounds like a poor positioning on your part. I don't know.
It was absolutely poor positioning. so much poor positioning. And this is sort of where my inexperience... Oh, did I mention that the Blightbringer died? Until turn...
You didn't, but I think everyone assumed that it died like
bottom. Yes, exactly. So,
did you let it get befuddled or something? Or?
No, I can't get befuddled.
Oh, okay.
I had to move up and kill contesting Toro, and it was the best thing to do, so I thought.
Did it kill the Toro?
It failed.
Jesus!
It left it on like 2 boxers or so, so Golab could move normally up from behind a forest, kill it, and then sprint into the zone he needed, but then I misplaced Golab, so he didn't cover the entire zone with Entropic Aura. So yeah, there you go.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was a shit game from my side.
It's a bit of a train wreck, yeah.
It was a train wreck. The big thing, the big takeaway from this is I should have just gone with my original plan and drop Abby 2, where I have so much more experience.
Yeah.
That and
go ahead.
That and Kaliswan is the most boring ass warlock to play in the game.
Yup.
Sure is.
Holy fuck. It felt like it. Like when I was naming these two lists, so I called the Abbey 2 list, I called Supports of Steth, as you know. So I called Kaliswan, Clock is my friend. And that was basically my win condition was, I'm going to try and have the opponent solve these puzzles. If they don't, I win on Clock. If they do, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And like I said, I should have, like, the Kaliswan list was flawed from the start. And having, this is a strong word, but dropping it three times when I wasn't experienced with it and it wasn't optimized was a bad thing. So I learned so much from that. I would say. Also, I'm never going to play Kaliswan again, probably.
Yep. Do you understand now why every time Kaliswan gets brought up, I'm the one sitting here going, yeah, he's probably good, but he's boring, and I would rather do literally anything else.
Yeah, I'm so happy for CID of opening up our options, to be honest.
We have so many good options in a couple days. Yeah. Or in the last... Whenever this comes out, I don't know.
Yeah. So, like, my final verdict is, this was a great event. I hope more people get to experience playing team games than just the players who are playing in the WTC. Like I hope that there would be more team games in general because it was a lot of fun. Like it's also there's like a difference in how you handle loss and how you get sort of like the post match reports and how you sort of evaluate your play and talking to your teammates. All of that stuff helps you so much, especially as a new player.
Mm-hmm.
I would also recommend, like, if you're a new player, just talk to your opponent afterwards and ask, so what do you think I did wrong? Which I did for most of the games, which is cool. They all, so sort of everyone was very helpful and sort of, yeah, they were sort of like, well, if you had done this, I would have had a hard time doing this. And when I was playing Jeremy and Mollower, he was like, well, don't put tentacles in charge range of the Void Archons. So, yeah.
So, as far as team events go, I think that's one thing that a lot of people who haven't played in them or haven't played in them often kind of either don't see or don't ever really realize is that if you're, like, say you finish your game first, you can spend the rest of that round walking around and, like, watching what the rest of your team does. And if there's a close game or, like, somebody on your team is having, like, what appears to be a really rough time, you can't help them.
Yeah.
But if you can be an extra set of eyes to be like, okay, when the game is over, here's things that you could do better or you could have done
exactly
better. things like that, because the difference between that and like a steamroller is, even if you're like friends with that person in a steamroller, if they come over and they're like, hey, I was watching your game and you did X, Y, and Z, like some part of, at least for me, like some part of my brain is always like, all right, go away, I didn't ask your opinion. Like
exactly.
Like, I appreciate it, but also go away. But in a team event, it's like an entirely different mentality of like, okay, you were watching. What did I screw up here? Even if you won, you can be like, okay, what did I do wrong? Because that was way too close.
Yeah, and that's one of the cool things. So I had my captain was watching the game, the first game, because that was the one on, that was desynchronized.
Mm-hmm.
So he was watching that game versus Grimkin. And he had some really cool, like, for example, I forgot completely about snacking on Proteus. It's like, well, yeah. And I didn't even apply the Grievous Wounds. So it was like, I'm playing the Wanderer, and he has the stupid Arcana where he heals everything when you kill a beast. So there were some things that are sort of like, well, that's really cool that you caught that, because now I had this little notebook that I was filling up with things.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of thing, having someone there to sort of see your things, when you're in it, your head is not always seeing the full picture.
Yeah, it's hard to catch all of your own mistakes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When like, you're going, I don't know how this is going to go. I got to do A and B and C. And if you screw something up, you don't maybe realize it until two turns later.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice to have somebody else there to be like, hey, you know when you did this? That was stupid. Don't do that again.
Yeah. So I was like, I was watching Danek's game versus Tsunami. I think you were streaming it, Tyrone.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where I could see, Dan was putting up a really good game versus Magnus, I would say.
I think that game was winnable, absolutely.
Yeah, he absolutely, like, that was a very winnable game. So he was up so much on clock, and he didn't actually need to do like he was doing that thing where you were talking about, like how he was killing a bunch of models he didn't need to kill. He could have just switched out the clock and be like, "Well, you're gonna clock yourself."
Was he paying 13 points for his Nerfs just so
he, oh my god.
No, he was playing Serin 1. I wanted to watch his Chrysa list. He had his Chrysa Precy idealist. I wanted to watch that in action because that seems like a blast.
Yeah, that would have been really interesting to see because he loved Chrysa before this, and we all thought he was crazy, but he believed in him, man.
I mean, he is crazy, so
it's nice to Dan.
Yeah, and like that list included Chrysa and 3 Nephilim Soldier.
That's wild.
I want to see that thing in action. So I wanted to see that. But so that was one of those things where I just noticed, this was definitely winnable. That was the game where Golab failed to kill a Toro like 3 turns in a row.
Yep, he sure did.
Oh, holy crap, that was rough.
He frenzied 1 turn as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad sort of like just everything kind of went wrong there.
Yeah, so he had a lot of things going against him. But those sort of things are, like, they're really cool.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really great. I'm glad there was, like, decent representation in the VTC for Legion.
Yeah.
We had 6 players, which is pretty good. It's not the 23 that Mercs had or the 12 of Venoth, but you know what? For pre-CID, that's not a bad turnout.
Just wait till the Blight Archons come out in Beth 2 and, you know, you get these ARM 27 chosen every turn because that's the thing that's absolutely going to happen. They're going to dominate the game.
Yeah.
Definitely not at all salty about this. It's fine.
No, so just a quick note on Beth 2. Jaden, I think, is already committed to putting her on the ban list for Brawl Machine. So don't, if you're planning to play Brawl Machine, maybe look somewhere else.
Yeah, in 25 point games, she's probably.
It's probably not okay.
No.
All right, my entire list is now sharing health for a turn. Your turn, like, what?
Yeah.
To be fair, I think she could cover the entire army.
Oh, easily.
In Brawl Machine.
Easily.
Oh, yeah. Unless she's taking a unit, yeah, absolutely.
Well, no, she picks herself, she takes the unit, and then she just walks up in front of you and says, "I dare you to hit me."
And so like, it's Beth 2, 5 chosen, and 2 heavies.
Exactly. it would not be okay. No.
It'd be fine.
Just quickly, final thoughts on the VTC. If they do run it again, Anders, are you going to play?
Absolutely. I think it was a really fun event. And like I said, I probably learned more playing into some of the best players in the world, even though like the meta in my town is really strong with a lot of good players. Some of them are sort of live game fanatics, so they didn't want to play in the VTC, and they've been like a bit annoyed with the whole pandemic and everything shutting down, and they can't play. But I learned a ton playing. Like, this is the best thing ever is to just play against really, really good players and look at what they do.
So I guess one question and one comment on that.
Yeah.
I guess. Two questions. We'll go through. We'll phrase the other one in the form of a question. Number one. Did you have fun? Just like, did you have a good time with it?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And then number two, do you think that you learned a lot because you were playing into really experienced and really good players, or that you were playing people outside of your normal meta? Because I have this weird theory, weird thought that like people get so ingrained into certain play styles because of how they're like local meta plays, because that's who you're going to play against the most, right? You're going to play against the same 10 or 12 people on whatever game night you have. And then the minute you go outside of that, you learn so much more because now your normal play style maybe doesn't work. Your normal tricks don't work. Or maybe certain things work a lot better because people aren't expecting them because they don't see you all the time.
I mean, I would say Fiona has been non-existent locally, because when she started, like, Europe has had a distribution problem with Archons, for example.
Yeah, a well-documented distribution problem, which sucks, yes. Right?
Yeah, so, like, some of us have taken to ordering things from, like, I ordered a bunch of stuff from the US. Even though I have to pay the extra taxes and everything, which is annoying. I also had.
Okay,
like,
but
I have
you're getting Blight Archon soon. You can order more stuff from the US. It's fine.
I've actually ordered them from Germany. That's the only place in Europe I found that could have that had them on pre-order. So I'm hoping I'm getting them and Beth too. Around the time, like probably a week or two after release, unless they fuck up distribution. I would say so. Going back to the question, I would say definitely I've played like. There's a lot of like Exalted, there's some Ret players, there's a bunch of Protectorate players. There seems to be a ton of Protectorate players in Sweden. I've played so many different Protectorate lists. I would say the bigger expanding the meta that you're playing into is a really big thing. A lot of these lists, a lot of these, like Gorton, I didn't even know Gorton existed.
Wow, you're
until
lucky.
I played him. So I was like, "Oh, what does this guy do? Oh, he's a bit like Magnus in a way, but he just pushes you against towards you and stuff." Okay, that's just annoying. So having to sort of like, and this is where like my lack of experience comes through because I always have to check with my opponents what their stuff does. I have to add it into War Room, and I have to sit there with my phone and go through their stuff while they're doing it. So I'm like, okay, so I'm trying to follow what you're doing right now. And you don't want to impede their clock either, because it's like it's their clock, and I don't want to switch over to me to ask everything either. So I'm sort of like just going with it and trying to learn at the same time. Like the things that I knew, for example, I played into Serenia a lot back here. So one of my most common opponents here plays Serenia in masses with the Avatar. So I knew that list actually. I knew what it was capable of. So that was always like I think the big thing is I would try to practice war with War Table and the way things work now, finding opponents even outside of your meta is not going to be as hard.
Right.
I think that's probably like if I were to join the next online event and or live event, depending on how things go and how they choose teams for it, I would definitely try to sort of get more practice matches in. I knew going into this that I wouldn't have that much time. The school semester had just started, and the school I worked at, and I have two small kids, etc. So I got like two or three practice matches in, and that's it. I would probably try and have more matches in if I was joining something else, and I would be trying to play more into the meta things.
Checks.
I would say, yeah.
For what it's worth, if you ever want to get a game in against North Americans, I'm not particularly good, but like,
time. Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know exactly what the time difference is here, but
I think
end at some point.
It's 01:47 in the middle of the night here.
Yeah, it's like plus 6 hours.
Yeah, I mean it's not bad. I'm a night owl. It's okay.
Yeah,
especially during weekends.
Well, with that in mind, I do want to thank you for coming on and chatting with us because it is quite late for you over there. So
it's fine. I think it's fun.
Yeah, no, War Machine's a great game, and like part of what I enjoy from this is that we get to talk to a lot of people from around the world and, you know, just inside my country as well. Like, I've talked to Matt McWaters, and we talked to Avery a couple times. Like, you know, just being able to get people on and chatting about the game, I think, is always a benefit, right?
I agree. I think you guys were actually... So, I didn't even listen much to podcasts before I started playing War Machine, so you guys got me hooked into that, I will tell you that.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah. Jinx.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I think we should probably wrap it up. It's been a bit over an hour now. Anders, you got anything to plug before you take off? Or any shout-outs you want to make?
Just want to shout-out to my team and my opponents in the VTC. You were all great.
Awesome. Ryan, how are you doing there, bud?
Still alive.
Excellent.
By some miracle of science.
Do you have... You know, I'm not going to get into that.
Do I No. Ask the question.
Do you have science in America?
We do. It's just somewhere in the 1970s at this point. Instead of going forward, it's slowly regressing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like the exact opposite. We're basically getting into like the Warhammer 40K universe over here. Technology started like 40 years ago, and it's just slowly been going backwards since then.
Gotcha.
As well as, you know, civil rights, basic human decency, a lot of things.
Yeah. 4-0 for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a tough loss.
That sucks.
Yeah. Anyway, this is not a politics podcast, but wear your fucking masks, people.
Get me a bottle of Sortilege. We can turn this into a politics podcast.
Nope.
Real fucking
quick. The only way that happens is if we go get Dan.
I mean,
I know what can happen. I know. It's fine. All right. And for real, you got anything to talk about, Ryan, before we pack it up?
Thank you to everyone for listening. Thanks to Line of Sight for offering to host us now. I did a bat rep, Beth 1 versus Scar 1 a little bit ago and posted it on the page. So go take a look at that if you're looking for some new Beth 1 shenanigans. And if you're not painting right now, you should be.
Yeah.
Because I've been on like a painting kick lately and managed to get a bunch of stuff done. And I'm an idiot, so if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah, your stuff looks really good. I haven't done anything since the last episode, so I got nothing to talk about on that front. How about you, Anders? Do any painting?
I painted Cyril.
Boom, oh, there you go.
Yeah, I did. So he's done. I'm joining the Facebook Paint Pledge thing, so I still have, well, I have 8 or 9 days to do my Bloodseer and Kralix, and I'm done with my pledge for the month.
Sweet. Well, yeah, people join the Paint Pledge. That's a great community of people. As far as
I've got like 9 days to do 2 Angeliuses because they're sitting in a jar next to me getting stripped, and because I didn't feel like putting them together, I decided to do a bunch of other stuff instead. So, yeah.
They're pretty flat, so like it's fine.
I mean, yeah, they'll probably be fine. There's not exactly a lot of surface area to them.
They paint up pretty quick. All right, that'll be good. That'll be enough. Thank you so much, Anders, for joining us. Talking about
thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. Ryan, as always, nice to hear from you. And
is it though?
It is. Come on now.
That sounds fake as shit.
Whatever. Well, you sound better this week, so that's good.
Yeah, I wonder why. Why would I sound better, Tyrone? What the fuck did you do?
No reason. Not important. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 78 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you again soon.
Or maybe we won't. Who knows?
Yeah, this could be the last one. All right. Bye, guys.